The Way of the Wise Art, Level 2, The Christ Mysteries, Module 1, The Christ Event. Color of this module is light red. Welcome back to The Way of the Wise Art. This is Module 1 of Level 2, and it will prove to be extremely significant for us as we enter the deeper understandings of the Christ mysteries. For one is the number of the Christ event, the number of individuality. Let us begin with the first line of the poem. What force makes a tree grow? Now, one of the great occult principles is simply to ask. As Jesus put it, ask and it shall be given unto you. As we have seen in the first level of the wise art, spiritual consciousness is a reflective consciousness. This means that if we make a statement, the spiritual worlds reflect this back at us as a question. For example, if we say, I am a great healer, the universe reflects this back as, are you sure? Or, how do you know? Or other similar questions. On the other hand, if we ask, how may I become a great healer? Then the spiritual world will reflect certain ideas and insights back. If we have trained ourselves to listen spiritually, then we may be able to hear these replies and become the richer for them. So we are asking a question about a tree. Obviously, the tree is important because it appears as the dominant feature of the central image, but also a caricature. The dry tree makes an appearance at the bottom left hand of the page. From level one, we now understand that the tree symbol can represent different things. On the one hand, it represents the etheric body. We should take this interpretation into account, for the artist has managed to show all elements of the human being in this design. The landscape represents the physical body, the tree, as we noticed, the etheric. The birds are the astral, and the human figure represents the soul and the I am. In the first instance then, the force which makes the tree grow is the etheric energy, the very force of life and vitality. In the very last module of level one, we met a very powerful metaphor of the tree of life. This tree is a representation not just of who we are, but also a representation of the 10 levels of consciousness in the spiritual worlds. The force which makes this tree grow is then the energy and power given from the heights of the divine worlds. There is yet another metaphor you may know. The tree is also the cross upon which Christ was crucified. This tree is in fact the world of physical incarnation, for every time we identify ourselves with physical incarnation, we crucify the divine within. The cross of Golgotha is a reflection in the physical world of the tree of life. The highest sephira, or state of being, is known as Kether, the crown. In the incarnation of Christ, the divine descends from the heights of the Godhead into the depths of matter. The artist has told us about this by showing that the crown has fallen around the base of the tree in his picture. There is an ancient saying in the Kabbalah, Kether is in Malkuth, and Malkuth is in Kether. One could say that this union of the highest with the lowest is one of the great understandings of the Christ mysteries. We shall continue with our inquiry about the tree. The phrase tree of life is found in two places in the Bible. In the very last book, the book of Revelation, and in the very first book, the book of Genesis. In between these two books is the history of the evolution of the human soul. The stories recorded in the book we know as Genesis are about the very ancient condition of the human being. They record a time before we ever inhabited a physical body. The writer of Genesis puts it this way. The Lord God, he says, planted a garden in Eden. The Lord God planted a garden in Eden. That is, the etheric levels of the spiritual worlds. And there he put the man he had formed. In other words, the human soul at this stage had acquired an astral body and an etheric body, and so was able to live in the etheric worlds. God, according to the writer, also planted the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the garden. Later, we also meet the first woman Eve and the serpent. But he forbade the man and the woman to eat the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. There are profound truths in this simple story. We began with one tree, and now we have to account for two trees. Firstly, we might question just why God planted these two trees in the middle of the garden if Adam and Eve were not allowed to eat the fruit. The key to understanding is that the Garden of Eden is the etheric spiritual levels. At the core of the etheric, the middle of the garden, is the life force. The tree of life is the life force at the heart of the etheric. Life comes from the beings of the higher spiritual worlds and is channeled through the tree of life into the etheric. So the tree of life is necessary for the very existence of the Garden of Eden. What about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? It is this tree that is the stumbling block. God gives Adam strict instructions, but in the end, as we know, Adam follows the advice of his wife, who follows the advice of the serpent. To pick up the account of Genesis again, the serpent, of course, is not a physical being, but a spiritual one, more subtle than any other wild creature, as the writer puts it. The serpent contradicts God by telling Eve that if she would eat the fruit of the tree, in his words, you will not die, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing both good and evil. And actually, the serpent turned out to be quite right. A spiritual being, after all, cannot lie in the spiritual worlds. Adam and Eve did not die, at least not immediately. The serpent also tells Eve, when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. The end result seems a little less spectacular than the claims of the serpent, for when Adam and Eve eat the fruit, they discover that they are naked and hastily sew themselves aprons of fig leaves. What are we to make of this story? There are two elements we need to address. Firstly, the nature of the tree of good and evil, the knowledge of good and evil, and secondly, the discovery of nakedness, which is really the discovery of sexuality. In the first place, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is always associated with the tree of life. In fact, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is a reflection of the tree of life. Or, to put it another way, it is the shadow of the tree of life. The tree of life is the fullness of the emanation of the Godhead, beginning with the unfathomable realm beyond Kether. The divine consciousness unfolds itself through the stages of the tree of life. Why does the divine need to do this? The ancient philosophers thought about this deeply and came up with a surprising answer. The Godhead needs to know itself. What a strange concept. Why shouldn't the Godhead know itself? The reason is that in its pristine and primal form, the Godhead has knowledge of itself from the inside, but because it is all that is, it cannot have knowledge of itself from the outside. The original consciousness would be truly cosmic because it encompasses the whole cosmos and there is nothing outside it. There is a book written at the turn of the last century where the author Richard Buck gives an account of an experience which came upon him. He records that after a night reading mystical poetry with friends, he went for a long drive in a hansom cab. What happened next came without warning. His mind, deeply under the influence of the ideas, images, and emotions called up by the reading and talk of the evening, was calm and peaceful. He was in a state of quiet, almost passive enjoyment. All at once, without warning of any kind, he found himself wrapped around, as it were, by a flame-coloured cloud. For an instant, he thought of fire, some sudden conflagration in the great city. The next, he knew that the light was within himself. Directly afterwards, there came upon him a sense of exaltation, of immense joyousness, accompanied or immediately followed by an intellectual illumination quite impossible to describe. Into his brain streamed one momentary lightning flash of the Brahmanic splendor, which has ever since lightened his life. Upon his heart fell one drop of Brahmic bliss, leaving thenceforward for always an aftertaste of heaven. In this experience, Buck has a glimpse of the etheric spiritual consciousness which we enjoyed before we became entangled in physical incarnation. You might say that he had a brief visit to the Garden of Eden. In what he calls the Brahmic bliss, he experiences the consciousness of the gods, but in so doing, he loses something, and that is the ability to experience the limitations of his very own humanity. The experience of our own limitations is the gift of the serpent. The Kabbalists and philosophers argue that through the process of emanation of levels of spiritual consciousness, the divine created the tree of life. But in so doing, the tree cast, as it were, a shadow. So a second tree came into being, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. By eating the fruit of this tree, in other words, entering into the Sephiroth or centres of consciousness of this other tree, Adam and Eve were able to look back upon the original tree of life and perceive themselves from the viewpoint of an external observer. It is this perception that had been reserved for the gods, for human beings were not originally intended to have this external independent consciousness. In this, the serpent was quite correct. Adam and Eve did become like God, knowing good and evil. For it is only in the awareness of choice that the possibility of good and evil can arise. The serpent, then, is a spiritual being who brought about a certain change of consciousness within the human soul. One of the old names for this being is Lucifer, which literally means the one who bears the light. And Lucifer did bear the light of a new consciousness, not one that the gods had designed, but nevertheless an impulse was given that would change our destiny. Lucifer, or the Luciferic spirits, did something else. They entered into our astral and brought about a change in sexuality. I'm sure you've remembered that at this stage, human souls had not yet descended into physical bodies. The Tree of Life, in fact, finished at Yesod, which is the sexual centre. Yesod is also the astral centre on the tree, so the Luciferic spirits entered into our astral and began to work on our desire levels, and especially, as I have remarked, on our sexuality. Well, you can see Lucifer depicted in the central picture. Lucifer is the bald-headed man dressed in red, talking to the man dressed in white. The man dressed in white is our soul. Our soul is worried about the tree, and quite rightly so, as we shall see. The Luciferic influences are still with us, resident in our astral body. They have become those voices which in Module 1 of Level 1 we entitled the Misdirector. Lucifer wants to direct our attentions in other directions. What sort of directions are these? We have already seen it in the picture. The man who represents our own sense of self is gesturing urgently towards the tree. Perhaps he is saying, "Look at that thief stealing the fruit." Lucifer is calmly engaging him in conversation. The self is being distracted from the matters at hand. There are so many ways in which our misdirector distracts us from the matters in hand. We have to make a living, look after our children, maintain or create relationships, water the garden, mow the lawns. As we become more oriented towards spirituality, Lucifer introduces us to an amazing new set of distractions. There are meditation techniques, breathing techniques, physical exercises, crystals to meditate upon, chants to sing, and above all, books to read. Now, of course, we're not saying that we should ignore our career, give our children away, let the lawn become wild and unruly. We need to give a certain amount of attention to the conditions of life, but they should not become the reason for our existence. In the same way, knowledge of spiritual techniques and practices may become a huge distraction from the matter that should concern us most. The Buddha, who could say much in a few words, put it very neatly when he said to his disciples with his last breath, "Work out your own salvation with diligence." We can easily discover for ourselves the strength of the conversation we are having with Lucifer. Try sitting down for 5 minutes and watching the thoughts that come into your mind. Of course, thoughts will come into your mind, hopefully at least. Now, here is the difficult part. Watch what you do with these thoughts. If you are like me, then very quickly we become entangled in the thoughts which flow in and out. We become involved in an inner conversation. This is the conversation we are having with Lucifer. We have been having this conversation for perhaps 1 million years. It is why we've become so mentally acute. We have become so accustomed to the inner voices that we regard this consciousness as the norm. In the central picture, we see the soul holding its own in this conversation. It can happen, however, that the voice of Lucifer becomes so insistent it drowns out the voice of the soul. This happens, to take one example out of many, in the case of some anorexics. The sufferer hears a voice in their head that encourages them to eat less and less. If the person continues to listen to this voice, then eventually they will die. It becomes imperative for us to listen to the voice of the soul. The soul does not shout at us, it does not nag, but it has its own concerns. One of the soul's greatest concerns is the thief. This thief has climbed from the earth into the tree by a ladder. Here he is robbing us of the fruit of our tree. The energies and beauty that we have produced should have returned as a gift to the spiritual worlds, symbolized by the birds flying into the heavens. Instead of being connected to the heavens, a new connection is being created. We are becoming creatures of the physical world. The thief, like Lucifer, is also a spiritual being. Thousands of years, he was known in the Zoroastrian religion as Ahriman, a name which Rudolf Steiner revived at the beginning of the 20th century. You will remember that although God promised Adam and Eve they would die if they ate of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, that did not happen immediately. Instead, the writer of Genesis records that God made for Adam and for his wife garments of skins and clothed them. In other words, the souls descended into physical bodies. Once this happened, they were cut off from the Garden of Eden, the spiritual worlds, and had to develop a life in physical bodies. It was at this stage that the influence of Ahriman began to be felt. In fact, the event of death itself is the result of the interference of Ahriman. We have seen that Lucifer is the inner voice that wants to distract us from the reality of who we are. The realm of Lucifer is still the astral world, so Lucifer is quite happy if we lose our physical body. Hence, many pathologies which lead to a destruction of the physical are the results of the luciferic energies at work. Ahriman works in quite a different way. Ahriman wants to make us part of the earth because that is his realm. The Ahrimanic energies work to bind us to the earth. They inform us that only this physical existence is real. Religion, spirituality, vision, beauty, and even love are a fantasy which mature people can dispense with. The ultimate end point of the work of Ahriman is the dry tree of the poem, depicted at the bottom left-hand corner of the page. While the luciferic forces work within the astral bodies, The aromatic energies have associated themselves with our etheric levels. These are the levels of life, which Ahriman wants to change to the forces of death. As I wrote these words, there was a man in a cafe in Sydney who was listening to a voice in his head which was not his own. He was listening to the voice of Ahriman. Ahriman tells him to destroy and to create death, because in so doing he will give himself over to the power of the Ahrimanic beings in his afterlife. He has been fed, as the poem says, with doubt, hate and despair. On that day, Melody asked, and many priests joined in, that the whole free priest movement do mass for the people involved. And this is the Wisard's act, giving the water of love and compassion to the thirsting roots. The roles of Lucifer and Ahriman are clearly outlined in the Book of Revelation. In chapter 12, we read, "A great portent appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was with child, and she cried out in her pangs of birth in anguish for delivery. And another portent appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns." Now war arose in heaven, Michael and his angels fighting against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought, but they were defeated, and there was no longer any place for them in heaven. The dragon who appears in heaven is Lucifer. For originally Lucifer, as we have seen, was a spiritual being from the spiritual worlds. Ahriman is depicted in chapter 13. "I saw a beast rising out of the sea, with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems upon its horns." Whereas Lucifer originates in the heavens, Ahriman is a being from the depths of the earth. You may have noted that both the dragon and the beast are described as having 7 heads and 10 horns. This indicates that both energies work through our 7 spiritual centers and our 10 centers of consciousness. If you direct your attention now towards the image at the bottom right hand of the page, you will see a subtle depiction of this in the tarot card. Here the figure of the Magus links the energies from the higher worlds, that's the world of Lucifer, with the physical world, the world of Ahriman. The symbol of the lemniscate above the head shows that this individual is an initiate. The initiate is someone who has evolved into an individuality and who can control the energies which surround them. Sometimes I like to imagine myself in a life perhaps 500 years ago, and then look with the eyes of this old incarnation at the world around me now. I find that I am filled with wonder and awe at the non-stop proliferation of miracles I see. There is magic light that appears at the touch of a switch, chariots which move of their own accord, and boxes which display magic pictures of events real and unreal, better than the best quality crystal ball. We actually live in an age of miracles and wonders, and these marvels are the transformations of the energies of Lucifer and Ahriman through the human individuality. If you have followed me so far, you may be wondering how we are meant to deal with these powerful spiritual forces which can be so destructive. You may remember in Module 3 of the first level, we investigated dualities which seemed to be in conflict, for example, light and darkness. In the Western tradition, it is not sufficient that one or the other ends of a polarity prevail. Instead, we seek to resolve a conflict through the introduction of a third point. The third point changes a line into a triangle, creating a new space. The resolution of light and darkness, for example, is through colour. What is the resolution of Lucifer and Ahriman? The resolution, the third point of the triangle, is Christ. Just imagine for a moment a line that joins Lucifer and Ahriman as opposing forces, and then add the third point to create an equilateral triangle, and Christ is at the point of the triangle. We now come to one of the deep mysteries of Christ. The purpose of the Christ event was to create a resolution of the forces of Ahriman and Lucifer. Ahriman would make us part of the earth. Lucifer would make us part of the spiritual world as part of him. What would Christ do? Christ does one thing that neither Lucifer nor Ahriman can possibly imagine. Christ gives us choice. What force makes a tree grow? This question we commenced with now begins to embrace us with answers. Look at the symbol at the top left hand of the page. It is a simple pillar. It makes the shape of number one. It joins the heavens and the earth. This is the primal quality of the human being. We who attempted out of the comfort of the spiritual heavens must now stand on our own feet and join heaven and earth. There is a law of spirit which says, before anything can be done, it has to be done first. The first time something is done, an archetype is created, which will be the template ever after for that deed. Imagine the first person to create a fire. Perhaps they observed that sparks came when two flints were struck. Perhaps in a moment of pure chance they struck sparks which caught in some dry leaves. Quickly they added some small pieces of wood, then larger ones. They had a fire. Ever after, fire created is manifested in this archetype from sparks into flame. There was a first time heaven and earth were united. It is called the Christ event. What force makes a tree grow? We are used to thinking a tree grows from the ground up, but the tree of life grows from the top down. First, Kether gives birth to Chochmah, which then branches to Bina, and then to Chesed, Gevurah, Tifereth, and so on down to Malkuth. This is the emanation of God. God is light, as St. John says, but also God is love. The force which creates life is simply love. But you will say, love has so many facets. When I was much younger, I enjoyed a hobby of climbing mountains. It is still my hobby, but as I have grown older, my mountains have become less physical and more of the metaphorical kind. There was one mountain which stands above all others in my memory. We would climb slowly to the edge of the bush line, and then there would be a long stretch of slippery shale and gravel until we came to solid rock. More strenuous climbing, and we would arrive at the snow line. After making our way through the snow, we would finally attain the summit. Now, at the very top of the mountain, the snow was beginning to melt. If you drank from it, you drank water of a purity that you only find at the tops of mountains. A small trickle flowed away down the mountain slopes. Out of curiosity, I one day followed the path of this little stream down the mountain. It pooled amongst the rocks below the snow line. It ran out of its rocky basin down into the gravel, where it pooled again before continuing down. As it came into the trees and shrubs of the bush line, it gathered other little trickles to itself, and now it was a proper stream. Again and again down the mountain it wandered, filling larger and larger pools, before continuing on its way until it became, at the bottom of the mountain, a river in its own right, meandering across the plain. This to me is a simple way of understanding how love flows from the highest level of the Godhead. It is at its most pure high in the tree, but as it flows down the tree, it becomes stronger and stronger in its effect in the world. When love comes to Tifereth, one might call this love in action, or love as a deed. Now Tifereth, as you may remember, is the Sephira of the sun. At the beginning of this module, we talked of the Garden of Eden. On the tree, the Garden of Eden is the region of the tree which exists between the Sephiroth of Tifereth and Yesod. It is in this region that our souls first wandered before they ever ventured forth into physical bodies. The guardian of this region is the spiritual being who rules the realm of Tifereth, the realm of the sun. This guardian is Christ, who has the capacity to express love as a deed. Look now at the symbol in the top right hand of the page. It is the sun symbol. The dot in the centre of the sun represents the being of Christ. We might call this individuality. We might also call it the action of Christ. Tifereth is directly connected to Kether, the crown. Tifereth is the sun of the tree, just as Christ is the Son of God. John's Gospel puts it succinctly: God, that is Kether the crown, so loved the world that he gave his only Son, Christ, that all who believe in him, that is, align themselves with him, should not perish but have eternal life. And our artist has depicted this as the descent of the crown of the tree to the earth. Think for a moment of what Christ had to achieve. On the one hand, he had to bestow independence from the voice of Lucifer. On the other hand, he had to free us from the death energies of Ahriman. You may remember that in chapter 12 of Revelation, we are introduced to a woman. This woman is in fact the human soul. She is clothed with the sun, the etheric. She has the moon under her feet, the astral. She is crowned with 12 stars, that is, her origins in the high spiritual worlds. And she is with child. This child born out of the human soul is our unique individuality. In metaphysics, we call it the I Am. The I Am was gifted to humanity by Christ in the Christ event. It is the dot at the center of the sun, a portion of the being of Christ that is uniquely ours. It is this gift that makes us able to think and act independently of the external pressures of Lucifer and Ahriman. We should always bear in mind that Lucifer and Ahriman are not evil. They simply have their own agendas and purposes and would like to attract us into those purposes. Christ has only one purpose, and that is to give us the power of choice. With this, we have the privilege of saying yes or no to other spiritual entities. We even have the privilege of saying yes or no to Christ. The essence of this gift of Christ is not intellect, nor spiritual powers. It is love. Let us return to our poem. It is love that makes the tree grow. The human spirit, which is modelled upon the tree of life, needs this energy to grow. When the writer of Genesis tells us that God said, "Let us make man in our own image, after our likeness," we should understand that the image of God is the tree of life. Men walk like trees, not only because we share the etheric levels with the plant world, but also because we contain the tree of life within ourselves. We have discovered that there are forces in existence which would feed our spiritual nature with energies that are distracting and alien to our essence. As we enter more deeply into the Christ mysteries, we begin to identify with that being who is love. Love as a deed. We begin to perceive the enormity of what we call the Christ event, when this love entered into the physical world. In so doing, Christ gave us the opportunity to reverse the fall from the spiritual worlds, symbolized by the story of the Garden of Eden. Christ did this by entering fully into our human condition, even to the point of embracing death. Christ, however, then showed us a new way. He shows us that we can transcend our human existence and transform our bodies, etheric, astral, and physical. If we follow the way of Christ, then we shall be able to say, "Death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is thy victory? O death, where is thy sting?" As our understanding grows, we become able more and more to open up to the gifts of love which pour into us from the Christ forces. As we do this, our own inner tree vibrates with the wonder and transforming energy of this love. Finally, in our turn, like Christ, we become balancers, harmonizers, healers, and co-redeemers of the world. As the music returns, imagine yourself surrounded by the most beautiful light red of the etheric worlds. The colour is like the colour of new peach blossom in spring. As you feel this life energy enter into you, know that for a moment you are back in the Garden of Eden, where everything is in balance and in harmony. As you bask in this atmosphere, feel the presence of Christ, the Sun Being, the guardian of that region, who would walk with us sometimes in the garden. Now once again, he is as close to us as our own skin. Allow him to infuse you with his power, the power to be who you truly, most really are. So shall it be.